Hey, welcome back to Hour 2, or welcome to Hour 2, members. Only time for us to spend together. I'm Tony Parrinola, and today we have a very special treat for you. For right now, I'd love for you to center your attention on my guest. Now, Sharon Drew Morgan has developed the next step beyond consultative selling. She calls it the buying facilitation method, which has already been responsible in one case, just one case, to increase entry point order size from $300 to $2,000 a transaction. Now, I knew that would get your attention because I know Sharon Drew Morgan's going to get your attention because she is a best-selling author, a New York Times best-selling author. She joins me now with Selling with Integrity. Sharon Drew, welcome to the show. Now, Sharon Drew, you have done some spectacular research, and I just would love for you to share with the listener what you mean by selling with integrity, first of all, because, you know, we've all been through the Larry Wilson stuff and the Neil Rackham stuff and the David Sandler stuff. I mean, we've seen that and how powerful it is, the consultative selling model, you know? I mean, that's the way we want to sell, but you've taken it all kind of beyond, and you've used the foundation of your religious belief, Buddhism, to kind of bring together like a buyer and a seller, haven't you?
Well, there's a lot of things to respond to. First, let me say that Larry and Neil are both friends of mine, and David Sandler was a friend of mine, too. I think we all kind of know each other in the business and respect each other a lot.
Yes, and I also know those gentlemen, too, and they're legends.
They are legends. David Sandler called me before he died, actually, and asked if he could buy me out, and I thought that was the greatest honor of them all. What I figured out somewhere along the line in my 30-year selling career was that the sales methodology I had been taught was basically a manipulative process, that it was all built around me figuring out some way to position or present or pitch this obviously fabulous product that I had, and figure out some way to get this buyer to want to buy it. And I felt really uncomfortable because I knew that every person I called and made nice to, every person that I called and tried to make a relationship with and was friendly and chipper with, was all based on my selling something.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this for a lot of years. I was a multi-million dollar producer. I was very successful at it. As a matter of fact, when I started off as a stockbroker with Merrill Lynch in the 70s, I used to call people and say, "Hi, I'm Sharon Drew Morgan, and I'd like 3 minutes of your time, but I want to tell you that I'm going to lose money for you." And I ended up being the rookie of the year, and I signed up more accounts in 6 months in a bear market than anybody ever had in a year. And people used to say, "You're telling me that you're going to lose money for me? You're being honest. Everyone else loses it and tells me they're going to make it. You're
right.
Telling me the truth."
You kind of brought them in. You kind of attracted them through your honesty, even though it wasn't a real pleasant message to deliver.
And I didn't know what else to do because I was being trained conventionally mm-hmm. about pitching product.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was I opened up my own company in London, and I became the buyer. I was at the other end. And I saw sellers trying to sell to me. And I realized the problem was that I had a very intricate, unique, idiosyncratic system that I lived within as an entrepreneur. And that people were on the outside of this system trying to pitch me something from outside. And no matter what it looked like to them, I lived in a very idiosyncratic world.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't understand it. They had a wonderful macro view, but I had a micro view.
Right.
And I realized that there was a glitch between the buying and the selling. And then I remembered all those years I was selling and realized that there didn't seem to be a connection between this fabulous pitch and presentation I made and when or how or if or why the buyer decided to respond at the time they ever decided to respond, if they indeed did.
Yeah, and it seems the longer the time goes on, the wider the gap gets between the buyer and the seller sometimes.
All the time.
Yeah.
And the more, and then the seller sits there and looks at the phone and looks at the number and looks at the number and looks at the phone
right.
and says,
right.
Am I supposed to call now? So then you call up and you go, hi,
yeah.
Remember me?
Yeah. Is this a good time? No.
or they leave a message and say, I know you said you were getting back to me. It's been about 2 months. I thought I might just call and say hi. So you're kind of stuck at that point because the problem is inherent in the sales system. The sales system has been based on product. And I want to just get back to your question for a moment. What I began realizing through this whole manipulative process, and there was only really one way, even the consultative way to me as a Buddhist felt manipulative, I began realizing that there was a vast difference between the selling skills and the buying skills. And what I've done is I've developed a buying facilitation system that gives the seller the responsibility and skills to teach the buyer how to line up all of those intricate, unique variables that they have that nobody from outside can see, and teaches them how to make a decision. So for me, it's a servant leader model. It's ethical, moral, and values filled, and is based on a lot of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and is based on my Buddhist values that we're all here to serve each other and everyone has their own answer.
Well, you know, right there, if we hold on that one thought, we're all here to serve each other and everyone has their own answer. That was the voice of Sharon Drew Morgan, and Sharon Drew is the author of a New York Times bestseller, just one of her three books, New York Times bestseller, Selling with Integrity, and you're listening to her voice on Selling Across America. Now, Sharon Drew, let me take you back for a moment to this. We're all here to serve each other.
Yes.
Do you feel, I feel in the selling environment today that the buyers are more educated at buying than the sellers are educated at selling?
It's a very interesting point you're bringing up, and actually, I believe there's a different job that sellers need to have right now.
Amen.
Historically, and if you go back, let's say, even to Dale Carnegie 70 years ago, sellers were absolutely necessary to pitch and promote product. There weren't computers then. The airplanes were just taking hold. There was the phone system stank. There was really no way to get information except to meet Joe down by the corner and tell him about the buggy.
And schmooze, yeah.
So that's how people got their information. The salespeople were the harbingers of change, and they still are, by the way, of information. And as we've progressed, we now have such an amazing multimedia system that's global that sellers aren't needed anymore to give information.
Ouch. Oh, you just shot an arrow into the heart of a bazillion salespeople because they think their job is to pitch product. Duh.
Well, yes and but.
Yes, and but is right.
20 years ago, my friend Neil Rackham and my friend Larry Wilson and my friend Jacques Wirth and all those wonderful men that began changing the paradigm in the 80s, they came forth and said, hey, guys, we have to bring people in. So they brought the pitch method into consultative selling and said, you need to ask questions of people, which was absolutely, I mean, I once had a long talk with Neil about it, and Neil said it took him 15 years to convince people you were supposed to ask questions. He'd been doing it years before that.
Yeah, well, now what's that got to do with selling? Selling is telling.
Selling is telling.
Yeah, selling is telling. I mean, Jesus.
I remember the conversation I had with David Sandler when David said, I tried to get outside the box but didn't know how to go as far as I needed to, and you've gone all the way outside. You've done my thinking for me.
Oh, what a lovely compliment.
Oh, it was lovely. Yeah. This was right before he died. It was just lovely.
What a great man.
Wonderful. And so we had all those wonderful men in the 80s that said, let's now bring people in. So what they did the best they could. They developed questions that said, well, why do you need that shirt? And how many shirts do you need? As opposed to saying, boy, have I got a great shirt for you.
Right. And what would happen if you didn't have that shirt? You
know, that's where it began being a little bit manipulative.
Yeah.
Because I will tell you that knowing Neil and knowing David, and I did some work for Larry when he was at Pecos River, and knowing Jacques, these people are not manipulative people. Salespeople have melded that manipulation in because they're trying to make a sale, still thinking of their job is to base everything on selling a product.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like a spring. It wants to go back to its old original shape. You know, let's face it, this is so ingrained
in
us salespeople.
And salespeople operate a lot on ego.
Yeah.
And so it's about them. What's happened is in the last 20 years, and, you know, when people say I'm using the new sales paradigm, I'm using consultative selling, and I cheekily say, what else are you using that's 20 years old? What's happened in the last even 5 years is that the Internet has taken such hold of our lives that we can now get, as buyers, all the information we need.
Yeah, without talking to anybody.
We do not need a salesperson to give us information. In fact, buyers know more than the sellers do. They know all the competition globally. They know what they should be paying. They know what kind of services they should be getting. And if they don't like what they're getting, they just click on something and go to something else.
So, I'm going to interrupt here. I want the listener to just hear what Sharon Drew just said. Buyers know more than sellers because they take the time to do the research to find out more about what they're going to buy or what they want to buy.
And the competitive products.
Yes.
And the types of services.
Of course.
So now that leaves sellers at a loss.
Big time.
If we don't have information to push, what indeed is our job? And you know what? One of the things that's happened is that one-third of the sales forces have been let go because they're no longer needed, and CRM has allegedly tried to take its place.
Well, that too. You know what's happened too? We salespeople have ignored the cost of sales to the point where we've driven it so high that the price points are low, the cost of sales too high, the margins go down, and guess what? We can't hold a job anymore.
Can't hold a job. So and they keep playing musical salespeople now. It's the funniest thing. A salesperson leaves one job and gets the exact same job that someone else left at the next company, and that person goes to his old company.
Right.
And it's like musical chairs.
Right.
So what I've done is I've actually put an entirely new slant on what the job of sales is and what sales can do.
Now, that in and of itself is huge.
Well, it's huge, and I've been doing it for 15 years, and I'm tired.
You don't sound tired.
well, that's because you're so exciting to talk to.
You're too sweet.
Here's the deal. Until or unless buyers discover how to create their own solution and come up with their own answers that are indicative of their unique buying environment, they are not going to make a new decision.
Say that again.
Okay.
Because I couldn't write it down all, but I wrote down unique buying situation.
Let me say this differently. Our organizations have become extremely complex. We now have partners. We never used to have partners like this before. We have inter-team people working together and that switch for every project. We have stakeholders in ways that we never did. Our customers now sometimes are our partners. We put them online together with us. We have global partners, competition. We have mergers. We have so much now going on within our companies that we cannot bring in change without facing some form of disruption. And any time we disrupt a static system, by definition, we get chaos. Now, before a company is going to bring in a new product or a new vendor and face annoying a partner or a new initiative that gets disrupted in some way and face chaos, we need to align all of those systems within our culture that need to be managed so that we can have stasis once we bring in the new product or vendor.
Now, Sharon Drew, I can see the eyes of salespeople now just glassed over because they're thinking, oh, this is not my job. This is some heady marketing person's job, some leader's job. Man, I'm down in the trenches. My feet are in the street. My knees are in the breeze. But, you know, one of the key attachments that you just made for me as a salesperson is that I'm not thinking about my company going through this. I got to be thinking about my prospect's company going through this.
Well, I'm even going to bring this to another level for you. I'm going to give you the job of the true trusted advisor. You want to be a trusted advisor? Here's your new job. Your new job is to teach your buyer how to line up all of those unique and idiosyncratic variables that they need to align. So when they bring in your product, there won't be chaos, because that's the length of the sales cycle right now.
And the chaos is actually the risk factor that they don't want to face, because they're saying this risk is too high. They're really saying the chaos is too costly.
Absolutely.
And therefore, on my business card, I should have not account executive, senior account executive, account manager. I should have trusted advisor.
You should have trusted advisor.
Because if I can aspire to being a trusted advisor, I will get referral sales. I'll have lifelong customers. Life will be starting a new chapter for me.
And you'll make more money.
Did you hear that, folks? Sharon Drew Morgan just said you can make more money. She's telling you that because she's dealing from her wide base of experience and pulling from one of her New York Times best-selling books, Selling with Integrity. That's Sharon Drew Morgan, and you're hearing her voice right here on Selling Across America. Now, Sharon, what's the first step to become the trusted advisor?
Well, the first thing you have to do is recognize that your job is not to sell anything.
That's right.
Your job is not to sell. And what you have to do is enter into the relationship with your buyer and actually teach them how to line up all of the variables. Let me give you a little bit of a metaphor. Let's say you're in a blimp. You sell ponds. This new information, by the way, is in my new ebook, and I've developed a whole model for this around a blimp. So you're in a blimp, you're a salesperson, and you sell ponds. You're overlooking your little terrain where you have a pond for sale, and you look down, and there's two little X's, and you see that they're down there, and they're not near each other, and you call down, and you can't see what they are. You just see their red blips. But you can see the map, and you can see the pond, and you can see the mountains and the paths. You can't see anything else because you're so high up. And you've got the macro view. And you call down, and one of them answers, and you say, hi, what are you doing down there? And he says, I want to buy a pond. Now, in conventional selling and traditional sales, you go, really? Let me tell you about this pond. In consultative selling, you go, really? You want a pond? What kind of a pond are you looking for? And who else wants the pond? And I see somebody else there. Does he want the pond too? So the two of you want ponds. How many other people want ponds? I'm making short shrift of this, but this is just an example. In buying facilitation, your job is to teach them how to make sense of their environment so that they can make a buying decision. I mean, do you want to sell or do you want to have someone buy? They're two different activities.
Now, Sharon Drew, help, because here's what I just did with your illustration. I wrote down three words, and I want you to tell me if I'm on the right track.
Okay.
The first word when you said, you know, the typical sales pitch would be, let me tell you about the pond. I wrote down tell, and then you went to the consultative model, and you say, well, you know, what kind of pond are you looking for? I wrote down ask.
Right.
And then when you went to the third buying facilitation model, I wrote down the word relate.
Relate.
Am I on the right track here?
Well, you're starting to be.
But oh, good. Okay. See, I am trainable. See, Mickey? See, I am trainable.
Good thing, too, huh?
Yeah.
So, but let me tell you the difference.
Okay.
See, from the blimp, I can see how far they are from the pond.
Mm-hmm.
I can see how far they are from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how far they are from the paths.
Mm-hmm.
I can see if they take the wrong path, they're going to end up in the mountains. I can see that from where I am. Salespeople can see the macro view, and that has made them believe that they can tell the client how to get to the pond. However, when I say to the guy I'm talking to, I say, so what has stopped you from getting to the pond until now? He says, well, I can't get over these big rocks here. Oh, really? Rocks? You can't see the rocks from where you are, but he sure can see them from where he is. Really? So what I'm hearing is you don't know how to climb. Oh, actually, I do know how to climb. I don't have any boots on. No boots. Really? So how did you end up in the pond, looking for a pond, far away from the pond, with no boots on, with rocks? Well, when I came out of the plane, they fell off. My boss picked them up. And his boss is now that other person. And in order for me to walk, I need to get my boots. I can't move. So what's stopping you from calling your boss? Oh, well, I have his phone. I grabbed his phone. He's got my boots. We're in trouble here. So what I'm hearing you say is that the two of you need to get together and ought to go forward to the pond. Actually, no. I'm only here to help him. He's the one that gets to the pond because he's the decision maker. The person that's down in the trenches sees the micro. There is no way that the person in the blimp can see the micro.
And I would also think in this very visual, because I mean, I can see this in front of me, the way you're explaining it. It's like the word picture, the story you're telling.
Good.
In this story, what I see happening is me as a salesperson, as soon as I hear the first problem, I want to immediately offer a solution
to
it.
Jump in and sell it and fix it
but,
for him.
Right. Hey, you know, Mr. Fix-It, here I come. You know, I'm on my horse and my shining armor, and I'm going to fix this person's first problem they mentioned, which is really not the problem stopping them from getting the pond.
Absolutely. And this is where some of my Buddhist precepts come in.
Yes.
Where they talk about serving the buyer.
Yes.
So if I stay in right mind, if I stay in beginner's mind, I can step back and not have any answers whatsoever.
Right. Give us, give the beginner's mind now. Give us a little insight into that. Some of us may not
be
aware.
As a Buddhist, you stay with a blank mind as often as possible, so you're always curious.
Yes.
So when you're in the blimp and you hear, well, I don't have the boots on, and I have the rocks, and I don't have a friend, you go, oh, really? Isn't that interesting? And I keep saying to myself, so what else is missing? So what else is missing? So what
you're
else is missing?
Peeling back the onion.
That's what I'm helping them do.
Yes.
Now, the trick here.
Oh, good. There's a trick. I knew we'd come to some trickery at last.
The trick is that I do not need the answers. They need the answers because they need to get to the pond. I know about the pond. They need to get there. They have to navigate through the rocks, through the boots, through the phones, through the paths, through the mountains. They need a way to navigate, but it's right in front of them. They're deep in the micro. My job is to teach them how to navigate through their internal unique issues that I will never be able to see from my macro standpoint.
Sharon Drew, you just gave me the 7 very powerful words, and I'm sure you know you did this because you're guiding me down this path. You are. And here's the words, as 7 words. I don't need the answer. They do.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Because I can be as right as I want to be.
Right.
I can have the best product in the world, and of course I do. I can have all the answers. I can have the best pitch, the best promotion. I have worked with major accounting firms that have $350,000, if not $1 million presentations. They have all the answers, and you know what? They're right. They are right.
But it's not about being right.
It's not about being right. You actually have a choice of being right and being in relationship.
Oh.
And when you take your job as a true trusted advisor,
yeah,
you teach them how to line up all of their micro variables that need to be lined up for them to find their best answers, and then you just serve them and provide the solution.
That's a book in 17. You're done. You're done.
Okay.
That's amazing.
Yes.
It's simple. That is profoundly.
It's not as simple to do, but the concept is simple.
No, it's simple. Yes. It's very a simple concept, but it's not easy to do. Because our immediate, my knee-jerk reaction is to fix it. Here, let me tell you what you got to do to get over that rock. Wait a minute, then the onion's not peeled all the way back yet.
And you know what? It's not about your product. It's about how they're going to buy, given the issues that they need to manage within their structure, their environment.
Yes, to facilitate using your product.
Not only that, but to facilitate and manage all of the variables that need to be addressed. When a software company called me and they said, we want to become customer-centric, and I said, cool, how are your customers currently buying you? And he said, they call in. And I said, okay. And what happens if it's a two-pronged decision? He said, they call in twice. And I said, okay. I said, how do you plan on mitigating the distance between being customer-centric and having a one-way buying channel?
Right. And they were stopped dead in their tracks.
Well, no, that's when he hired me.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that question shows him where he has to look. I don't know his answer, but when I create the question that makes him look in the right place, he comes up with his best answer. His answer might have been, you know what, we don't want to mitigate that distance. We want to still have it the way we are. You're right. We don't want to change. Goodbye. He could have said that.
Right.
And I never would have told him about my product or how wonderful I was. He needed to answer that question. Otherwise, he couldn't move forward. I once got a call from a hospital that had an outreach program, and they wanted to work with me, and they called. And he said, I've been reading your books, and I love your material, and I decided to pick up the phone to call you to see when you could come visit us. And I said, well, what has caused you to need me today as opposed to yesterday? And he said,
boy, that's a hot question.
Well, he said, because I just finished one of your books and I'm really enthralled. And I said, well, what has stopped you from creating the kind of environment that wouldn't need me at all to begin with? And he went, you know what? Let me call you back. So I never heard from him again. He called back 11 months later. 11 months later, he said, do you know what the answer to the question was? I said, please.
Yeah, enlighten me.
He said, the answer was me. And when I heard you ask that question, I realized that I was the one that had kept us where we were and that I had to make changes internally with myself, with my team, in order for us to even be ready for you. And I've been working on that for the past 11 months, and now I'm ready.
Hey, that is the voice of Sharon Drew Morgan, and she is enlightening us with her knowledge and intellectual work that's contained in her New York Times best-selling book, Selling with Integrity. And you're hearing this on Selling Across America, of course. Now, Sharon Drew, what you just illustrated to all of us, that during this 11-month time when the prospect had to discover that it was him as the work that needed to be done, he needed to do, not you. If you ignored that, you would have went through an 11-month sales cycle, racking up the cost of sales, demos, presentations, site visits, lunches, Dunkin' Donuts, little sprinkly things on top, just driving people crazy and pushing them away from you rather than what you did. You drew them towards you.
I taught him how to buy. I continually have a choice. Do I want to sell or do I want to have someone buy? They are two different activities.
And Sharon Drew, I want to ask you to repeat that, please, because it is worth the price of admission of hour two. Just say that one more time for me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you want to sell or do you want to have someone buy? They are two different activities.
And the second, having someone buy, invokes a shorter sales cycle. Because you weren't selling during that 11 months. You stopped, and the prospect continued to do their work, and then they came back to you. You weren't racking up your cost of sales. So your sales cycle stopped there and went into hibernation.
Right.
The screen went to sleep until the prospect came back and wiggled the mouse.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you, there's a few other ways that this can work easily. I was working with a major accounting firm, one of the I was going to say top five, but there's now four, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Dropping like flies.
Right, one of the big four. Yeah. And they had a three-year sales cycle on a $50 million service. You know, it was a very large international change, the tax service, and it was a three-year sales cycle. They called me and they said they wanted this to be shorter. What I recognized was that they were going in with a huge presentation, beautiful watches, great suits, fabulous ties. And they were making this presentation that said, look at me, look how great I am, look how smart I am, look how smart we are. Yeah. See what you need, we know what you need, and pick us.
Right.
And I said, you know, you're using your body as a prospecting tool. The next group that comes in is going to look just as pretty and sound just as smart. It's not about what you're selling, it's about what they need to buy. What they then did was they walked out and kept calling the tax director for 6 months until the tax director got the next level of people involved, and the sale went on, the process went on for a year. What we did was we used the phone, which is kind of shocking. Dale Carnegie said you're supposed to do face-to-face, and by the way, that's where that comes from, that need to do face-to-face. It comes from Dale Carnegie in 1937, because phones didn't work so well at that time, I don't think. So we began using the phone and began asking very important questions. Questions like, now remember, these are not information poll questions. These are questions to help them make decisions. So questions like, how do you have your global management team aligned so when you bring in a fix for that problem, you won't have chaos? And that question, after a 10-minute phone conversation with the tax director, brought the CFO on the phone. The tax guy said, just a minute.
Yeah.
And the CFO got right on the phone and said, I heard you have some great questions that we need to have answers to. Can you ask them of me now, please?
Wow.
That alone corrected the sales cycle by 6 months.
Yep.
We brought a 3-year sales cycle down to 4 months.
Yeah, getting to the one of the decision makers with a simple question.
Well, it wasn't such a... I mean, it takes a while to learn to figure out when to use these questions.
Oh, yeah.
But what it really did was it taught them how they needed to manage their internal variables so that when they did bring in a fix, they wouldn't have chaos. Remember that just because they can see a problem doesn't mean they know how to manage the change that it would take to fix it.
Yeah, and you go back to the thought where it's all about helping someone buy. And because we assume that they know how to do that.
We assume because our product is great and we're pitching it in just the right way.
That they're going to buy.
And that's why, look at the impediments to sales. Look at the impediments that we assume are true. Every issue of all the major sales magazines for the last 20 years that I've been reading them all talk about getting past the gatekeeper, knowing how to close, getting to the right people. They all have been talking about the same things for years and years and years because these are impediments to sales. And the reason is because they're pushing information with the assumption that people will know what to do with it and that it's cogent, that it's absolutely necessary for them to have that to fix something. Just because they need it doesn't mean they know how to manage their environment if they were to buy it. There are people that will use their current vendor and have less than appropriate service because they don't want to manage the change that it would take to change vendor.
Oh, yeah. It would absolutely bring things to a grinding halt.
I had a friend who called me with this sorry tale. She had gone into a company, and she said, I'm embarrassed to tell you I did this, but I'm going to tell you, so I know you're going to write about this, but I'm really embarrassed.
Just don't use my name.
Yes. So she went into a company, and she made this fabulous presentation, and they called her back a couple of times to present to other people. Using buying facilitation, she would have had all the people there by the time she got there and not have to go back 4 times. So she went back. Then she called, and they said, wait, we're going through this merger and so forth. And then they called her, and they said, we love your stuff. Can you go up to Minneapolis and give the presentation to the guys up there? She flew up there, gave the presentation, kisses, kisses, hugs, hugs, love you, when can you start? She went back home, all kinds of excited. The next day she gets a call. They said, you know what, the people in Minneapolis have a new business partner that's already taken care of this.
Right.
She was in that process for 10 months.
Yep.
It cost her, I don't even know what it cost her.
It's a frightening thought.
Okay? Yeah. Now, if she had worked through the buying facilitation process, one of the questions would have been something like, how are you currently managing X? And how is your decision team working with Y? And what would need to happen for X and Y to work together so that you could get your needs met? What has currently stopped you from using your current internal resources so that you can manage this on your own?
You know why salespeople won't do that? Because they're afraid that they're going to hear all the wrong answers and they're going to have to take the prospect out of their sales funnel, off their sales forecast. Their managers will look over their shoulder and say, your funnel is anemic. I want you to fill it up full of leads. Get out there and make some presentations and proposals.
I know it. I was working with a company that, one of the insurance companies, medical insurance companies, And they had they were paying their salespeople by visits, if you can even imagine that.
Oh, God.
So they were they had 110 visits and 18 closed sales. And after 4 weeks after taking the training with me, they went down to 27 visits and 25 closed sales. So they were going to see only those people that closed.
Yes, it appeared to be less activity, and it was, but it was more of the right activity.
Yeah.
Right,
they doubled their sales.
Yeah.
So they, again, don't use your body for a prospecting tool. Just go to see those people that are ready, willing, able to close. One of the things that buying facilitation does is it teaches the buyer how to see those elements within their micro world, how to see where the path is in relation to the rocks, how to see where the boss is in relation to where you're standing without boots. It allows you to see everything because as the micro view, I can help you look at where you need to look. I can't come up with your answers. But as your true trusted advisor, I can have you look at the pieces that you need to be looking at because I have the expertise on a broad view to support you having your expertise on the internal view.
Right. And you're the fresh set of guiding eyeballs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's very profound, Sharon Drew. That is the voice, by the way, of Sharon Drew Morgan. She is a New York Times bestselling author. We happen to be talking about the buying facilitation process, which Sharon Drew created and continues to teach the enlightened salespeople on the world, this planet that we all live in. And you're hearing it on Selling Across America. So, Sharon Drew, now, how difficult is it to gather up salespeople, herd them together, and get them to go through this paradigm shift?
The visionary people and visionary companies have found me until now. And the salespeople fight me for the first day of a 3-day training. They fight and fight and fight and fight.
Yeah, but.
But they're smarter than me.
Yeah. Yeah, they're, you don't know what it's like today, Sharon. Yeah.
No, and you've been training for too long, and you haven't been selling for a long time, and you obviously don't know how to do this, and you don't know what my problem is. But those that yield the loudest break the cleanest, and by day three they got it. It's they've got to practice it over 8 weeks. But you know what? I have to do a lot of unlearning with them as well as learning.
Yeah.
They have to learn how to listen differently. That's the biggest problem. They all know how to pitch. So I start off by saying, look, you guys know how to sell. You don't need me to teach you how to sell. You're fabulous. You're great. What you don't know how to do quite yet is to step back and listen to the systems issues that buyers are going through so that you can guide them through their buying facilitation, their buying decision process. It's not about sales, right? It's about helping them decide how to buy and helping them line up their internal variables.
Do you have people say to you, Sharon Drew, well, when do I get to start selling?
Actually, by the time I get through with them after the first day, they're fine.
They get it.
They get it because they realize that they've been having such trouble. I mean, they've been hearing delays. They've been hearing money objections. When you use buying facilitation, you don't have money objections anymore because people can you ask a question like, there are lots of products like mine that are similarly priced. How are you going to choose between us?
Mm-hmm.
And because they have to decide. Remember, it's not about selling, it's helping them decide.
Right.
So they're going to have to do it with you or without you. It might as well be with you, right? They're going to have to make that decision anyway.
Right.
It might as well be with you.
Right.
So you ask them, we have products that are similar, you can see them on the net. How are you going to choose between us? And if they happen to say, well, I guess they're on price. Now, people never decide just on price. I will tell you that. The only time they decide on price is when they can't find any other differentiator. So then they use price. If it all looks like a black shirt and they all look the same and feel the same, they might as well get the cheapest one.
You know, I totally agree with you.
Right?
Totally.
Now, when sellers say we'll do it with price, you can never keep being the cheapest one, ever. You can't ever, because there'll always be somebody else who's cheaper. So if the price issue has come up, now you say, I hear you've got a very high criteria around price. Is there anything else that you would like to think about while you're making this decision? Well, then they always come up with service and quality.
Right.
Okay? And so how would you know that the service and quality of our company and product are such before you buy?
Pretty difficult.
that you would know. Well, no, everyone has criteria. It's really interesting. Sometimes they say, well, I'd like to talk to a referral.
Right.
Or if I see X on the web, or gosh, this conversation is making me trust you already. Mm-hmm. The other people I've talked to haven't talked with me like this and haven't cared.
Right. Can you give me one to use for a few days or whatever?
Whatever. Yeah. Their criteria. Again, it's a buying criteria, not a selling criteria. Right? So when you begin lining up all of these impediments to sales, time. The time delay is the time it takes them to line up their internal variables. Teach them how to do it. Teach them where to look. Teach them how to manage the management and the stakeholders and the budget and the initiatives. Teach them through your questions how to do that. How do you plan on bringing your new partner in, given they've just been with you for 2 months? Because you know what? If you don't do that, they're going to wait a year until it's all settled, and by that time, they're using somebody else.
Yeah, or the management has changed, or there was a buyout or a roll-up or whatever.
So you ask these facilitative questions, which, how do you plan on lining up the X so that when you bring in a change, they're on board alongside of you? And what needs to happen for that to work like that so that there's no chaos? Remember, you're guiding them through the change and bringing in the variables that you see from a macro standpoint, trusting that they're going to manage that from a micro standpoint.
Right.
So all of these impediments, these time delays, these price objections, these competition issues, all disappear when you're using buying facilitation. You can use it. I worked with a cosmetics company. They taught it to their over-the-counter people for selling mascara and lipstick. I trained an Amish furniture company to sell $5,000 end tables retail. It doesn't matter what the context is, because it's about how people buy. The Harvard Negotiation Project is using pieces of this. This is the same for negotiating. It's the same. We worked with a large manufacturing company for their customer service people. We got rid of the layer of supervisors that were managing the difficult problems, because there were no more difficult problems.
Now,
we hear you're really unhappy. What would it look like if we fix that for you?
Now, Sharon Drew, you mentioned during the first few moments of our interview that you have implemented some NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, in this, and I haven't seen that yet here, or at least I haven't felt it. Where does it reside?
Well, first of all, in the listening, I've broken down the listening process as per NLP,
mm-hmm.
so that
okay.
I teach people how to break down their own listening,
mm-hmm.
and I teach people how to break down their own beliefs and values and criteria so that they can continually decide how to work for the customer rather than for the product.
Mm-hmm.
So while I'm training, I use a lot of NLP technology to help them make better choices. I've actually developed a choice model that teaches the seller how to choose different forms of communication or listening or questioning,
mm-hmm.
so that they can go back in and make the appropriate choice for the buyer at that time. So that's mixed together with the Buddhist values of serving another. And I personally like making a lot of money too. So you put that together with making money and being aggressive, and there you go.
Yeah, and you know, there's nothing wrong with making piles of money.
Why
Nothing wrong at all. I mean, my nose is very much like Mother Teresa's nose, but that's where the similarity ends.
And you know what? I can serve and I can make money. They're not in juxtaposition to each other.
Yep, you're exactly right, Sharon Drew. I'm totally with you on that one. By the way, I've been interviewing for the last 49 minutes or so, Sharon Drew Morgan. Profound thoughts and insights into changing our selling model and have more respect for the buyer and turn it into a buying model. Author of the New York Times bestseller, Selling with Integrity. And you're hearing all of this, of course, on Selling Across America. With just a few minutes left here, an hour or two. The hour has gone by so quickly. We've got about 8 minutes or so left.
I would love to make a plug.
Yes. Okay. This is plug time.
I have just written a new book that brings all of my most important thinking together. Selling with Integrity is a wonderful book, and I wrote it in 1995. I've just written an e-book. which I'm sorry, folks, is an ebook, but it only takes 4 minutes to print off. I timed it. We made sure with the designer it's easy. And it brings all of this new thinking together. It gives you the systems thinking about how buyers buy, and it gives you as much detail about this this complex system as I could muster on an 84-page ebook. It's called Buying Facilitation, The New Way to Sell That Expands and Influences Decisions.
And well, that's a big title. Say that again.
Well, Buying Facilitation is the name of the book.
Okay.
And the subtitle is The New Way to Sell That Expands and Influences Decisions.
Beautiful.
So I've got the ebook. I do training in corporations. I do public trainings. And I do one-on-one coaching for salespeople or managers having a hard time.
How do we participate in all this?
www.newsalesparadigm.com is my website, or 512-457-0246 is my direct line.
Say the number again.
512-457-0246.
Now, to leave the listener with the golden nugget from Sharon Drew. I'm sure you're asked this, you know, at the closing of your speech, you know, the last few moments of your personal interaction with your students. What would you like to leave this audience with? We've got about 5 more minutes. So hold on, let me check. Time check here. We got 5 minutes, Eddie? Hold on 1 sec. 5 minutes, yeah. We got about 5 minutes.
You ready?
Yep.
Okay. I've said it a few times before, but it's really difficult for sellers to understand. The question to keep asking themselves is, do you want to sell or do you want to have someone buy? And to remember that at this point in history, the job of sales is no longer to sell product, but to help your buyer line up all of those unique variables that they need to manage, and do it not through guiding them to your product, but by teaching them how to see all the variables that they need to manage, not that you need to sell with. It's not about your product, and their environment really is chaotic anyway. And consultative selling asked questions about the product arena, i.e. if you're selling computers, they talk about users. But they wouldn't talk about stakeholders, mergers, and initiatives that the company was progressing. So it's not about the product arena. It's about the environment that the buyer lives within. And your job is to help them align their own idiosyncratic variables, not to sell product. They're going to buy from you when you've done that because you're a true trusted advisor. So just keep remembering, do you want to sell or have someone buy? Which? You always have that choice.
You know, Sharon Drew, you have an ability that's a very unique ability to frame your thoughts in word pictures. I could close my eyes and listen to you and get it without taking notes.
Oh, thank you, Tony.
You're very welcome. And I'm a big note taker. And Mickey's handing me pieces of paper because I'm running out of paper. She handed me a pad earlier. I love taking notes, and I learned so much from my guest. And in your case, you said a moment ago, at this moment in history, and I believe that if the salespeople listening today and that will listen to these archives understand that they have a place in this moment in history to stop selling. And I know that just drives sales managers crazy when you say that. You know, they're going to freak out when they hear me say this. Stop listening to this guy. He's a nutcase. But if you think about it, the thought of stop selling and then to start help people buy.
Facilitating the buying environment.
Yeah, it is timely. The world is ready for this.
I hope so. And you know what else? You can close sales. I just got a call from a brand new client thanking me. They had a one-year sales cycle. On a good day, it was 8 months. They just closed their first sale after 4 weeks of taking the class.
Isn't that magnificent?
So you're helping them buy. They have to go through these decisions anyway. The time it takes them to come up with their own solution is the length of the sales cycle. Help them do it sooner and have a compressed sales cycle. Win the competition because you're a true trusted advisor, and you won't be so distressed pushing people to sell when all you have to do is support them in making buying decisions.
And in the process, you're going to lower your cost of sales and shorten your sales cycle, and those initial orders are going to be bigger, just like you've illustrated.
And you can teach people who weren't even ready to buy, or didn't even think they needed to buy, how to make a buying decision.
And then they're lifelong customers, and
forever.
They have a lifelong value, and they're going to buy again and again and again from you, and you're going to get rid of the competition because you're the trusted advisor.
There you go.
I'm a believer. Sharon Drew Morgan, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart to come on the show and share with us your wisdom.
Thank you for having me. It's been a fun interview. I got to talk for a whole hour without anybody disturbing me. It was great.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony.
We'll have you back again.
Hopefully.
Yep. Okay. Well, there you have it, folks. Now, you got to admit that stretching into Sharon Drew's model of the buying facilitation, that whole model is going to take a little bit of stretching. But you know, that's what life is all about. If we're not growing, we're dying. So stretch a little bit. Take her up on her offer. Go to her website. Embrace the ebook that she has to offer. And you be the judge. Hey, this is Tony Parrinello, your proud and enthusiastic host right here on Selling Across America. You know, we're here every Friday for you as a member. Listen to the archives as much as you want. Beat the drum. Have your friends come and listen too. And we'll see you next Friday. And between now and then, remember to take care of yourself, because if you don't, no one else will. See you next week.